This week on RSBNB Update, Smooth Mint is here and why it's good that you may not notice it right away. It's all duty of care in the live stream and why it's so important in 2019. Plus, of course, feedback on Yak Track and Double XP Weekend Extended. This is RSBNB Update, episode 755, recorded Thursday, December 12th, 2019. Taking care of smooth movement. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tannis and myself are back to discuss a big update for the game this week. You know, it might not seem big, but it actually is, right?
I'm hoping you can explain this because, like, just from a player perspective, I didn't notice. I don't want to take away from the update, but I even started trying a bunch of different outfits on because I'm like, maybe it's what I'm wearing where I'm not noticing it. I didn't notice much of a difference. So I'm just going to assume that it's great for the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an under the hood thing. I don't know. Why don't you tell us more about it, Shane?
Well, you know, before we do that, if you want to follow along with the episode, you can find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. I am Shane12088, and of course he is Tannis79 in game. And you know, this is an interesting update because it delves deep into the game engine. And you know, the reason I said this is such a good update for players this week is because I have talked to many people, you included, who said, "I don't notice a thing. I don't notice a thing." And what that tells me is that, one, the update was subtle enough that it's not changing the way we play RuneScape, which is good. But if you look for it, you can't see it. And number two, the fact it hasn't broke any other content out there, like Hunter, for example, or any of the PVM stuff that we would definitely be hearing about at this point if that was indeed the case. The fact those aren't broken is what's telling me, hey, this is a good update. The fact to touch the engine underneath and was able to execute on this. Because just a bit of a brief rundown of what's happening here based on this news post and the dev blog that was put out and is linked in the subsequent news post is that every time you click on a spot in-game, a grid square, you're presented with your character moving, right? And we don't think anything about that. But what happens when you click is that the game says you want to go to this position and it calculates the best path for you to take. And that path is then calculated by the server, returned to your client, and previously your character would just execute it, moving your character along all the different grids to that point. And with that, they then add animations like the walk animation so that your character isn't just jumping between point to point to point, as in it's not just like blinking around on the screen, combining with the walk animations and the what they call in the industry tweening. Because if you start with something at position A and you want it to get to position B, back in the day when you used to have cartoons, like say the old-fashioned Disney cartoons, which were drawn by hand, you would have the artist draw point A and draw point B, and then you would have someone come in who is called an in-betweener, hence the term tweening, that would draw all the intermediate frames for it. And the game client does this, and previously it would look really jerky because your player would just turn left, turn right, continue straight, turn right again kind of thing, right? But what's actually happening with this update now is that if you're turning right, they're adding, as they said in the dev blog, they're making the path rather than just a sharp turn right, they're actually adding a Bezier curve, which on its own creates nice rounded edges. And anybody who's done work in something like Adobe Illustrator or Photoshop with the pen tool will know what a Bezier curve is. It's one of the biggest tools in these two drawing graphics arts programs. I don't know how people use it. I was never able to really draw with the pen tool or draw in Adobe Illustrator. But these curves effectively allow you to create smooth-looking, rounded edges by just connecting a few points together. And then, you know, they address the things that you can have really sharp turns and Bezier curves as well, and they just address that by adding more points to it. And what this effectively comes down to, just bringing it back to what your character does, is that rather than just moving forward, turning left abruptly, turning right abruptly, continuing on, and then turning right abruptly again, your character is just going to go on this curve in game. And this is why you're not noticing it, is because most of the time, and you ready for this? Most of the time when you click and you want to move somewhere, your character is going to take the most direct route possible, and that involves many straight lines. And that's why you're not noticing it, unless you actually look for it.
That makes more sense, because I was trying to test it out in the Max Guild, and I was running back and forth. People really thought
no,
it was
that's
crazy.
No, that's not the best way to
and
test
that
it.
Wasn't, yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't know.
The best way to test it is to walk around something like a tree. And for those watching the video version right now, I have that up. You can effectively just see the character, and every time it's time to turn the corner around the tree, the character pivots and rotates rather than just, you know, turning abruptly. So if you want to see it, just go walk around a tree or a fence post or a statue, something that's a one-by-one grid, and you'll be able to see it. That's the best way to see this if you want to exactly see what's happening with this in-game. So,
okay.
Yeah. There's
well,
a...
Go
ahead.
I just want to say it seems like it would be a low bar to say that didn't break anything, but actually I think that's a really important point because
it is
of
important.
how deep
yeah.
into the system it is. And so I just want to like highlight that a little bit because it's good when that happens, and I know it seems when you say it sounds like it's a low bar, but it's actually a pretty high bar with the
yeah.
depth
yeah,
that
definitely.
They went into
definitely.
To do it.
Definitely. So there's also an interesting marketing material piece that was brought out on Twitter. It was apparently cooked up with Mod Cookie, shows someone dancing at the needle, and I'll play this right now. And for those watching on the video version, you can see it. If not, you can find it linked at update.rsbnb.com. And, you know, this isn't RuneScape when you look at it. The guy's just dancing, and it looks just oh so smooth. You wouldn't be able to expect this beforehand. So I'll have this linked in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And did you know with this that it also... works for NPCs.
Oh.
Yeah.
No.
Because they use the
cool.
same movement mechanics.
Okay.
So it works for NPCs as well.
So this means we need to get our music boxes out and start
You definitely could. You definitely could. You definitely could. And I mean...
It's almost New Year's. I mean, I always find myself doing that in the Grand Exchange anyway. So, I mean...
Yeah. And I mean, perfect time to do it.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, this update is so small. And we're almost done talking about it to that point. We're not even 10 minutes into the podcast yet. But that's just exactly what it is. It's a nice little fix that you're going to notice if you pay close attention or you're actually walking in circles for some reason. And the fact that we're not having any major game-breaking issues with this, with the engine modifying the way characters move in a game that's this old, is something that should really be applauded.
Yeah, no, I'm impressed with that, even though, like I said, I didn't initially notice much. I wonder if, like, do you think the PBM community probably would notice it more because they're doing more... grid type of
well,
movement while they're bossing?
You know, the majority of the bosses out there don't move that much.
But you do.
Right.
Like, you're running around like a crazy person half the time, seems like.
I mean, based on what I know from David, he doesn't even need to look at what his character is doing, so I don't know. I don't know if...
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. He's really good.
Like, he's able to just go based on what the boss he's fighting does, and then when there's a... specific things that comes up, he can count the number of ticks in his head.
Really?
Until it's time to, you know, hit the barricade or whatever it might need to be.
Well, so much for that. Okay. I guess it'd be someone like me that doesn't know how to do it, that's running around like an idiot, like, I'm going to die.
Yeah. And, you know, there's actually a good Informer article on this, too, from Sirion talking about engine changes and the tick system just in particular, how things can go based on this and why, you know, we're unlikely to see huge engine changes on the level of removing the tick systems. You can read that at informer.rsvmb.com. That'll be up by the time the show is out. Let's see. So also this week we got the Slayer armor available in Solomon's General Store from December 10th. So this is a new piece of cosmetic armor, which I'm sure, as you know, everything that comes out of Solomon's General Store and cosmetics in this era of RuneScape is absolutely amazing. So there's that. Java client shuts down next week. And beyond that, I think we can move on to patch notes if you're good.
I'm good. I mean, I'm really happy that I'm good. If we don't have
because it's
anything, any problems to talk about.
and I mean that's precisely it. If you did have problems to talk about, it would be very concerning. And I mean, it's good that we don't need to be doing that. So
yeah, I'll take it.
All right. So moving on into the patch notes then for this week. So starting off, we got some changes for farming in Herblore 120 coming in. And this is something that I think many people forget that you can do. You can, once again, give your animals to Baby Shake so that they can be devoured in exchange for beans.
What?
Remember Baby Shakes, the troll?
I totally forgot that was even a...
Yeah, that's the troll that you can just discard animals to and get 10% of the adolescent bean value. If you don't want it for some reason.
Is that less than what you'd get for selling an elder
or something? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So why would you...
I mean, I guess if you just wanted to free up space, if you didn't have an animal seller available and you didn't have room in your storm barn... I guess that'd be
it's
a case
the
to do
animal seller, yeah. Okay.
Gotcha. I put most of my animals I get from Adamantite in there. Don't tell me you forgot about Adamantite either.
Yeah.
Adamantite is the trapper farmhand that randomly brings back one animal every 6 hours or so.
I never knew his name.
Oh, okay. Jeez, fair enough.
I'm surprised you got that friendly with the help. I mean... Wouldn't have expected you to know his name.
I know everyone.
Next thing you know, he's going to want vacation time and paid family leave. I mean,
also at the player owned farm, Pickle the cat is missing ever since 120 came out.
Oh and, no, Pickle!
Yeah, and
not Pickle.
I actually saw a tweet from Shawnee on this. He said that he was concerned that Pickle had disappeared with that update because, you know, Shawnee obviously left it a bit before this update came out, and Pickle was his name cat in real life. So he was wondering if his cat disappeared in game intentionally.
Sounds like it's on walkabout.
So I do wonder if Pickle is going to come back at some point on that.
That's funny.
There's also... You know, just speaking about the player-owned farm, if you examine the silo, it says, when they go low, we go silo. Previously, and they must have caught this and they didn't want a political reference in there. Previously, that silo said, if you examined it, when they go low, we go high, which is a Michelle Obama quote.
Yeah.
Yes, they got rid of that and changed it to when they go low, we go silo.
That's better because it doesn't work anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And see, these are all these little things about the player-owned farm that you pick up along the way.
Yeah, I guess. I go and do my business and I'm out. I guess I need to slow down and take in Oh, actually, I bet that's all in dialogue, so that's why I didn't know it.
Examine text for the silent.
Oh, examine text.
Yeah.
I hardly ever examine anything but people, and that's just because I want to see what kind of a noob somebody is. Or
what they're wearing.
Yeah, or what, like, sometimes if you're lucky, you'll catch a really good phrase. I like those.
Yeah. I encourage everyone to examine me in-game. You'll be directed to this podcast.
There you go.
The Castle Wars tickets obtained from the farming requests are now added directly to your currency pouch and an option to add the previously defective Castle Wars tickets to your currency pouch has been added. And, you know, I'm actually just going to take this moment and mention something here because this is really important.
I was hoping you would.
Something that we talked about and was saying would be a good thing. This week, one of the farming requests that I got, and one of the easy ones for that matter, awarded 15,000 Shattered Anima, which isn't a lot in the grand scheme of things, but it shows that that path is there. And the cost for this was 45 red berry seeds and a sheep.
I thought it was actually pretty cool. It's one of the better ones I've heard of.
It definitely was. And for this reason, red berry seeds had actually spiked. And I would say to any up-and-coming thieves out there, check the value of the seed stall for thieving with this. Because, I mean, I had problems buying at market value and 10% above market value because I had gotten rid of my red berry seeds ages ago. So I didn't have any. So I had to go buy them on there. But yeah.
Did somebody make a video on this too?
I don't know. I haven't looked into that.
Because that happened earlier.
Yeah, and I mean, the general sense I want to say to everybody is, folks, if you're watching YouTube and you see somebody say there's a money-making method out there, it's not a money-making method anymore. Because by the time it gets to YouTube, it's dead.
Yes.
And, you know, I like to give free monetary advice here on the podcast. And my free monetary advice to folks is, and once again, I have carried out a couple egg requests this week. I do have one to finish at the end of the show. When we're done, I'm going to try and touch base with the person on this. But my best money-making idea out of the farm is not necessarily a outright money-making idea. It's a way to save money. And it's that if you need any Bagratorexes or soon arcane apatosaurs or even potentially venomous dinosaurs, let me know. And the dinosaur breeding program continues. So that's a good way to make money.
Oh, I'm sure.
Or save money.
I still can't believe you're averaging what you're averaging.
Yeah, they've gone down to about 20 or 15 mil, the large dinosaurs, in terms of what they're actually selling for.
Yeah, but just, I mean, to be producing them.
Oh, yeah, I'm one a day. Since the last podcast, there's only been 2 days I haven't had an egg.
See, and I'm not even getting – I don't even think I get one – I don't know if I get one a day on my dragons.
I did re-roll my dinosaurs to have the visit Virile or Studly, whichever one of those gives more to breeding chance.
Okay. Yeah, I know Studly does.
But my dragons do not have those, and they produce every day still too, pretty much. So.
Okay.
Anyways, back to the patch notes. Sorry for that little distraction. I just had to follow up on the Shattered Anima and how the farm was going. Weapon poison potions will no longer instantly run out when used in conjunction with Lantadimi incense sticks, which is the incense sticks that make potions run for just a bit longer. And this is a hot fix from the previous week, but bean values have been upped across the board for all Ranch at a Time animals, and this is something that was talked about in last week's live stream, so nothing to write home about there. Now onto the Yak Track. Monkfish now count towards the cooking task on Yak Track. The Yak Track marker is now correctly aligned with prize number 25. In regards to progression, Zoger Bones now count towards the progression on that. I just skipped a Yak Track task. I used my second skip on a task that would either make more than 1,000 potions or bury more than 1,000 bones.
Okay.
I don't think I can be blamed for skipping on that.
No. Do you have to bury him, or can your altar work?
Wonder. I would say the altar would work. I'd also wonder if the bone crusher would work too. That might be interesting to check out.
Yeah.
Yak track tasks will no longer scale down when a member swaps into a free-to-play world. And this is something I got thinking about I never got to try, is that if you are a free-to-play member, is your yak track task easier?
Well, it's going to be more limited, right? I mean,
yeah, so I mean it would be. And this is what they talked about with this, is that it's providing value to everybody. So that this is really good. Because, you know, as members, we don't think about that, right?
Yeah, I kind of got an impression that people hadn't bought as much as I was hoping they would, but it does seem to be going well.
Yeah,
so that's
we'll talk about that in the live stream, which had some good news on that on the Yak Track front. So, invasion NPCs that the player has engaged with in the Heart of Gielan are no longer award XP and loot after the player has disengaged, preventing situations like closing bank interfaces long after leaving the dungeon. So the idea was is that you could tag something and then they die minutes after you leave the dungeon, and your bank window closes. Now here's a word I'm going to try and pronounce. Wakizashi has been added to the chat filter, and the K should no longer be blocked. So I assume that's
what the hell is Wakizashi?
I believe that's something from the arc.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If the chat filter was blocking it, what on earth did it think?
I have no idea.
That it was.
No idea.
Well, I'm always up for a curse word in another language. So, I mean, if that's something, I'll write it down.
The ability to imbue rings through the Soul Wars shop has been added. Extra parasols that the player does not require are no longer lost when making a black parasol, so it didn't just eat all of them up. Players will now be informed if using a mosquito card in dungeoneering that it will have no effect due to other boosts that are already present.
And
this is definitely going to be the last patch note for the Java client. Updated the Java client removal messaging. I just had to throw this one in here because for people on Java, you got another message this week about this.
It's happening.
Yeah, it's happening next Tuesday, I believe is the day.
Yeah.
Trimmed Masterwork Armor now gives a degrade warning when unprotected in a gravestone. Good. I mean, that's something you don't want to mess around with.
Yeah.
Weapon poison can be applied in the bank interface. And players who have already frozen treasure hunter categories will no longer use their Hearts of Ice during promotions which have the categories button disabled. Which, of course, was the glass box thing from when Yak Track first ran. Because I have promotions, I have certain areas disabled. So I was probably using Hearts of Ice when I didn't need to there.
Yeah, probably.
On the mobile front, improvements have been made to the Clan Citadel resource minigames interface, including increasing the sizing of the panels and text to better fit the space on mobile. Using spells from the spellbook will no longer lock the interface from being used on mobile. That's a pretty big deal. Yep. And fixed an issue where some spells and abilities would not activate from the mobile action bar.
Oh.
Yeah. Graphics-wise, they increased the icons in the Runecrafting Guild to the standard 36 by 32 pixel range. And finally, adjusted the soil in the Falador tree patch so that it looks like it's at a consistent level.
Okay.
And there's the patch notes for the week. I don't know. I mean, not too much to write home about there, but whenever there's a farming patch notes, I got to throw that in.
It's kind of quiet week, but
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah,
you can have those.
You know, I think the biggest one to come out of this week is probably, I'd say probably the Yak Track scaling one, and the Trim Masterwork. Probably
those are probably the most consequential. Yeah. I like the Mosquito Dungeoneering one just because I know I've used that
okay.
a number of times, and I probably didn't get a boost out of it because I had other boosts going.
Right,
so.
And I'm not a Dungeoneering person, yeah. so.
Shame nobody is, but we all have to do it.
Do we, though?
kind of.
I mean, in theory, I should have been going at Dungeoneering this week, given the fact that the daily challenges are changing next week.
Yeah, at least two floors a night, man.
Yeah. yeah.
Get you 200K a day. That's another mil, two mil.
yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that in just a bit of a recap of it. Livestream, though, Duty of Care. Mod Warden was going to be on this one, but apparently lost his voice.
Yep. And I believe it, because I don't think he's shy.
No, definitely not. So this was a stream with Mod Mike, Mod Calvin, and was hosted by Mod JD. And in general, they wanted to start talking about time spent in-game, encouraging healthy game habits, money spent, and what they're doing in regards to game content, then a bit on Treasure Hunter, Yak Track, and what they're doing about gold farming and the like. So we're going to run through this. So starting off, they talked about encouraging healthy game habits, which is something you and I have disagreed on in the past, and I think it is a good thing to support this. And they talked about the four-hour message in-game. They said we could have done this as a pop-up, but it would have been more distracting, and you don't want to do that if someone's in a boss fight or something to that effect. So that's why they opted for the chat message on that. And, you know, they said there's a good chance that if you're doing something, anything for 4 hours, you're going to get tired, and you should maybe just go, you know, take a bit of a breather and go do something else for a few minutes on this. And, I mean, I can see that.
Yeah, you know, this one was one that I was leery of going into because, you know, I didn't want the game to turn into like a nanny state type of situation. That being said, I understand, you know, we're dealing with adults over 18. We're dealing with people that are under 18, and that is a, you know, that's a different situation. And I think the way that they're approaching it is actually pretty good. I mean, I have like one little area of concern, but I like that we're getting a message for the spending stuff. I think that's good just as a, like if someone ganks your credit card or something, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think that's like, to me, that makes sense from a security standpoint. I don't want to be an adult having someone like second guessing or telling me, because believe me, you walk in Atlantic City, ain't nobody telling you, hey, dude, you've spent too much money. No, that ain't how it works, right? But this is a little bit different, so I get it. And so I thought those things were good. I really like that they're what they're talking about with kind of curtailing the toxicity in the game a little bit. But I'm a little apprehensive of how that is going to work because they did say that they're going to be looking at words and phrases. And the only reason I'm concerned about that is I think there's a lot of other ways of harassing people and being toxic that don't include some kind of reference to an identity. You know what I mean? Like, they can put words in that of, like, you know, protected communities, and it'll catch that. But there's so, it's so much more than that. And I think that it's gonna, you know, it's like, I just worry about that because we've seen what happened with YouTube when they've done the same thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And, yeah, that's all I'm saying. Like, if it's done right, it's great. But I 100% think that will be a challenge for them to get right.
And you know, for me, I feel that when it comes to these microtransaction behaviors, that's good that they're putting these. Are going to be putting these in. They say the trial will start before Christmas, and when the behavior appears, they'll reach out with a message at first, making sure that people are okay with that level of spending. And they want it to be more about the dialogue rather than outright blocking it. And, you know, with this, they also came around and said, you know, hey, We also, as part of being GDPR compliant, which is the EU privacy law, need to allow for people to completely delete their accounts if they want to. And that's something else that people can, you know, message Jagex to have done. But don't do that unless you're absolutely certain that you want to, because it's a not recoverable action. And when it comes to, you know, protecting players in-game, I completely agree with you that you need to be very cautious of that. Because if you're too strict, you effectively look as though you're trying to control what can be said. And we need to remember that, you know, there are aspects of this community that are a mature community. And I personally feel that unless something is, you know, outright bug abuse or breaking the game to that effect, if it's just players talking to one another and it starts to get really heated, that's what the ignore button is for.
Yeah, no, I completely agree
and
with that.
I feel the same way about social media. I don't think social media platforms should be targeting and removing people when they attack other people on the platform. I think it should be up to the individual to use the mute and block features that are available.
Well, and see, that's what I'm worried about, because what one person may take as an insult or a dig, someone else might not even it might not even cross your mind. You know what I mean? I mean, and I hate to pick this as an example, but literally you could use the wrong pronoun and catch all sorts of hell for it.
Yep.
And not mean anything. Like, not
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right. I know, so I've seen cases in game where players get upset if you refer to their character as the wrong pronoun, even if you are referring to them in person as the correct pronoun.
That's so confusing at this point. I don't. Yeah. So that part, you know,
and it's going to be a question: about. Is it going to be like Twitter's Trust and Safety Council?
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing: they said that they note, like, if they're getting a bunch of reports about somebody that's a disruptive player. I mean, they said that they're a disruptive player. That behavior doesn't change. That's how they are, and they try to, you know, they try to take measures against that. I feel like just step up those things, and you might, you know. And to me, if you step up those things, you're reducing the toxicity, and you're achieving your goals.
Yeah, I have one concern about this, and that is that if this becomes an automated system and it gets to a point where if you have a certain threshold of reports on a player, I'm worried about report bombing.
Oh, yeah.
If it becomes an automated system.
Yeah, that could happen.
Which you don't want.
You want some kind of human review in the process.
There are already filters in-game that will mute players if they say certain words.
And we know, like, if you say something that is just ridiculous it's a threat, they will turn that over to law enforcement, and people have went to prison because of it. And honestly, I feel like they got what they deserved in a lot of those situations. You know, I mean, really, like, you can't joke about.
I also think we need to be wary that we're in an era where, you know, as you mentioned, it's a very mature player base. I think at this point in time, it'd be interesting to see numbers on that. But I personally know, you know, a good number of players that enjoy sharing, as we could say, controversial and distasteful memes to some, and, you know, talking about them, that, you know, people who would occasionally browse websites like 4chan and the whatnot, who pull these memes out of there, and, you know, they're just having a good time that they feel with two players who are, you know, okay with talking about that. And if those two players are okay talking about it and no one is around, the system necessarily shouldn't come down on those kinds of people.
Right, but if it's automated, then it's going to catch them as well.
Right.
You know,
The question is, there needs to be this threshold that we still need to allow players to have these conversations that the system and people are going to see as controversial, but we can't have the system automatically muting people, because it was said in this stream that there are keyword phrases that are monitored in chat automatically. Then they're reviewed by the support team. And the question is there going to be a directive coming down from the top that these kind of things should be turned off immediately should they be seen? And if that's the case, that's something I think to be worried about. And we're not saying that people should be able to get away with whatever the hell they want. Just that if it was meant in a way that is definitely denigrating, then absolutely lock them up, throw away the key. But if it's just two people who are alone woodcutting somewhere out far away from people and they're having a conversation that might be controversial, let them have that conversation.
See, and I feel like that should – I mean, the easiest fix to that is take it to PM, right? I mean, and as long – that's kind
of
–
Or a chat channel, like French chat. But then the question is, are those going to be monitored too?
See, now that's my question. Because as for like the memes, stuff like that, the best place to do that kind of stuff is Discord. You know what I mean? Like, I think we can have these kinds of conversations out of the game, like while we're playing. Oh my, dude.
Like I'm not gonna talk about the memes that our friend group shares around, but they're hilarious. But they're hilarious and not appropriate.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, you know, it's like some of our stuff is it's definitely not safe for work, but we all know each other. You know what I mean? We know where everyone's coming from, and it's all meant lighthearted.
Yeah.
But a computer can't make that different. It can't distinguish that, you know? And so that's what I worry about a little bit on the algorithm side, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're aware of these issues, but
and then
what do you do when like with different, just even like regional, you know, there might be different insults in different countries or different parts of the world regionally that one person wouldn't recognize at all, but might be extremely disrespectful to someone else. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be a hell of a database to put together.
Right. Like, and you know, the one thing that gives me hope on this is that this whole duty of a care initiative started with Maude Warden when he arrived, and, you know, Overwatch. That's a community that has, you know, very, very vast different facets of it, and they seem to manage that well. So with his oversight, I'm sure we'll be fine. So
yeah, like I agree with the goals, and you know, I mean, who wouldn't love to see a little less hostility, I guess. But at the same time, I'm a big free speech absolutist. Yeah. So I you know, you do kind of run into kind of, I don't know, there's some friction there, I guess.
Indeed. And you know, that's what I always tell people in our Discord, is that nothing is off limits, and if someone gets offended by it, deal with it with them, and we'll help you deal with it if need be. So all right, so moving on in this, they talked about gold farming and botting websites. Recall a few weeks back, we actually talked about these being taken down and how important they were to take down on this front, because, you know, they do cost Jagex money on this. So they mentioned that, you know, we don't make money from these bot users or gold farmers. They cost us money.
Yeah.
They took down two large websites recently, which we, of course, talked about. They go through all the legal hoops, you know, trying to send takedown notices, then if necessary, courts and police forces with it. And their ultimate goal with this is to safeguard players and provide a safe gaming environment, which I think needed to be said, because, you know, looking at this, many people would see that, hey, these are just free accounts. Why don't they just, you know, bring them all in? But in reality, many of the gold farmers out there and botters are using stolen accounts, which are using in turn stolen credit card info, which costs Jagex lots of money. So much so that, you know, back in the day, the company had huge monetary losses from this and almost killed the game. But it's definitely something that still is an ongoing battle.
Yes, and you know, I'm glad they mentioned this because I know that is a common perception of a lot of people. It's like, oh, well, Jagex is still getting membership. But it's such a superficial way of kind of looking at it because they lose so much more money in the long run from that kind of abuse. And I also feel like if you have to tell somebody why they shouldn't be using a gold selling site, I don't know if there's much hope for them.
Yeah.
Because at this point you should know your account is most likely going to get stolen or hijacked, or your credit card number is going to end up somewhere
in Russia.
You know, like you should know these things at this point. Like I don't know how. I don't know. I guess it's for the benefit of the younger players out there that I guess they have to learn. They haven't experienced these things yet, but I feel kind of bad in a way though, because it does seem like it's going to be like it's a big game of whack-a-mole. You know, as soon as they knock down one site, another one's going to pop up. And I don't know how you solve that in the long run. I guess you just have to keep taking your shots at them. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's going to be a constant battle. So.
Yeah.
All right. They didn't then talked about satisfying engagement in regards to the monetization of RuneScape, which I think was a really interesting way of framing this live stream because, you know, did you – maybe I missed it, but just once in this live stream, we didn't hear microtransactions, did we?
No. We did not.
And that's a good thing.
Hey, man, I'm proud of old Mod Mike there. He's come a long way in a short amount of time, man.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so important because when you're looking at these kind of arguments, it's a question of how do we move forward on this? And one of the number one ways you can move forward with that is by effectively framing a narrative. And when you frame a narrative using a poisoned word or a word that some group has poisoned, in this case, microtransactions, you're not going to have any kind of real talk or discussion on that. So that's why I think satisfying engagement and then the delve into both Treasure Hunter, loot boxes, RNG, and Premier Pass was a good thing on this week's live stream.
Well, did you notice that within the framing, and I thought this was just a really good approach, and I don't even feel like it's I feel like it's kind of like it's an honest way of talking about it, but they tied everything back to value for the players.
Yep.
Whatever it was about getting your money's worth, getting value out of it. And I was like, that's good. That's how you want to talk about these things, because at the end of the day, this is what we're paying for, right? And so like every time you can tie it back to show people what they're getting for their money, I thought that was a good thing.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody needs to be happy about the way they play the game. And, you know, we've been very pleased with Yak Track, and we've been pleased with the Treasure Hunter experiment that was done. And that was the next thing that they talked about, in particular RNG and loot boxes, and the glass case promo being the first experiment. And they say it'll be back in the future. And this is the first and very early step in removing RNG from the Treasure Hunter process. And from what they saw, players saw the glass case thing as in the right direction to go, which removes the RNG aspect of it. And so much so is that the goal is going to be completely taking away RNG in the first few weeks of January with one of the new experiments that they're going to be running.
See, and I was really encouraged by that, but at first it felt like it was – like until they said January, I was getting the impression that it was going to take – a long time, and I'm like,
yeah, and you know, that's just
do it, guys, just
right?
Do it, right? Because for some reason, it seemed like they're totally fine with telling you what your chances are of that, but at for some reason, I kind of had this feeling like they're very reluctant to get to like do away with it, and I almost feel like that is they're not confident that they're going to make enough on all of the other things, which that makes sense. They've only tried a couple experiments at this point. I think you probably need a few more attempts, a few more tries, a few more things that you can bring in and kind of add to the whole.
Yeah.
So that at that point, you can get rid of the RNG. I don't know why it felt that way to me, but I was reassured when they said, yes, we are trying to end that. I'm like, okay, that made me feel better, you know, because it's like, even though I know, okay, there's five prizes and I know what they all are, I want one thing in particular. You know what I mean? Just let me buy the one thing that I want.
and see that's the thing. They want you to be able to eventually choose between three prizes.
Yes.
For treasure hunting.
And as long as I get to choose, I'm cool. But yeah. I didn't understand why they seemed very reluctant to get rid of it altogether.
Because what they have right now works so well.
Yes, but I really believe the more things like Yak Track and the Oddments rework, the more different lines of revenue we can bring in that are relevant to the game and provide value, the more of those you have, they don't have to be as big money makers, as long as when you put them all together, they make the same amount.
And you hit the nail on the head here about Yak Track, because that's exactly what Yak Track is supposed to do. Feedback is positive, they said, on this. Players didn't feel that it was squeezing them for value this time. There's enough value in it. It'll be back four times next year in cycles of 6 weeks on and then 6 weeks off. They're going to scale down the grindy tasks. And cool. Future versions will be at least as rewarding as the one that we currently have. And they said launching it alongside farming and herb lore probably wasn't the best idea.
Yeah, you know, I don't think the Yak Track was as big of a deal with the farming and herb lore, but the extended XP weekend, I did agree with that.
Yeah, that factored into it as well.
It did, because I didn't get to really participate in that in that launch, because I couldn't sacrifice that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's see. They said it's not the successor to Treasure Hunter. It's a part of the mix, and if good engagement can be proven, then it reduces the need for continual Treasure Hunter promos. So it's not a replacement to Treasure Hunter. It's just like you said, adding to the mix of monetization methods.
Yeah, I don't know why we didn't think to just encourage that before. Because I think you're right. This has worked so well for them that I think they felt like they can't ever get away from it, because they'll never be able to make the same amount of money, because at the end of the day, people are buying it because they want experience. I mean, let's be straight up. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's why Treasure Hunter is engaged with. But when you have all these other, you know, all of just a mix of all of these other alternative routes, then I think we will get there. And especially when you can purchase what you want. I know the criticism is going to be, but you're buying XP. Yeah. And we've been going on for how long now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think we're getting there. This seemed promising to me. And I do want to say one thing about, like, just the style of it. What an improvement. What an improvement in a month. Like, the last, like, what, three live streams have been good.
Yeah.
On point.
And you know, I think we need to address this, because I did take a cruise through the comments on the TLDW post and the Twitter as a result of this. And the discussion was, and at least was being articulated from that side, is that the players don't want more microtransactions, they're saying, and that's why they wanted this to be a replacement to Treasure Hunter. They didn't want to see it added on to it. But that's how you do things. You have to start with something and prove that it works. Then you can gradually ramp it up and then pivot away from doing those Treasure Hunter promotions.
Yeah, and that's what we really want.
Is it that hard to understand?
No, I think it's an echo chamber that reinforces itself and becomes a self-licking ice cream cone, you know?
We knew that.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the question I have is that, you know, if Yak Track prevents, say, 2 to 3 Treasure Hunter promotions from being done,
that's
isn't that a win? Because you didn't have those before? And it's about getting to that point of, you know, ramping Treasure Hunter down and supplementing it with something else.
We have to supplement. We know the financials, right? We've talked about the financials over and over and over. And right now, the game is healthy. Even from objective journalists, the game is healthy. So you don't want to mess with that too much, but we do want less Treasure Hunter. We want less randomness. And we have to be honest that, you know what? Some money is made because of the RNG aspects, because people are trying to get experience. And if we ever get to a point where we can buy directly what we want, we're going to need those other avenues to make up the difference. And that's not adding, I mean, that's not really like necessarily adding microtransactions as much as it is reorganizing how monetization works. That's the way I see it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Because they did make some,
because,
you know what I mean?
I mean,
there is money made from
I don't want to say I told you so, but this could just be so much more predatory. You know, Rocket League says they're removing their keys and crates, and oh boy, players are absolutely floored with how much the stuff costs after the keys were removed earlier this month.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reluctant to kind of use that kind of language because that's kind of like,
because we're not in that position.
Right. It's like, I could have beat you up more. I only punched you in the mouth. I mean, dude.
And take Wargaming with World of Tanks. They're releasing a new premium vehicle that is going to be the forefront of a new Russian tech tree coming early next year. Except
all
it's in a Christmas loot box.
Yeah, all of the Wargaming stuff is like that. And even with that, like, I mean, some of it you can buy what you want, but it's so expensive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Some back of the envelope calculations were done in this one tank. Just using average values would have made the company over $100 million.
Oh, my God. So that's why they're going to continue to do that. I mean, you know what I mean? I feel like
that's why I think we're in such a good place here with Yak Track and the transparency coming out now with Treasure Hunter, which I mean, we can talk about right now. The plan going forward for Treasure Hunter, the goal is to remove all blind chance from Treasure Hunter. Simple as that. So you know what you're going to be getting and you're going to have a choice. And it's going to be sooner than you think. Q1 of 2020.
Yes. Now, see, that's what's confusing, though. Like, when they say blind chance, it's like, so is that you have three items, you know what all three items are, but you don't know which one of those you're going to get? Because I don't really – I mean, that's better, but I
don't – The way it was described tells me that there's going to be three random items that are going to show up, and you're going to get to pick one.
Okay. That's better than the reverse.
Because they said any reward from Treasure Hunter should be a choice.
Either
in standard or with promos.
I mean, that's
and
better.
And this isn't the end goal, but it's one step in the direction they want to go.
Right. I think that it's encouraging because we're seeing movement on it. But, you know, let's hold their feet to the fire. Because I do think we can get to a day where you get exactly what you pay for, which is exactly what you pick out. And that's where we want to be.
Yeah. And, you know, they said the changes to this will mean that the prize claim interface will present a choice of three possible items. And the eventual aim is to have a system where the players are more comfortable. It's not a point of friction. They're getting good value. it speaks to freedom of choice and healthier gameplay. And there's lots of changes in 2020 that are on the horizon for Treasure Hunter. And I have one suggestion to Jagex on this. If they don't want it to be a point of convention, when they bring this thing out that makes it so you choose between three possible items, the name Treasure Hunter needs to go away. It needs to die.
I agree with that.
That is going to be the single biggest goodwill thing, along with this change when it rolls out, that they can do to improve the point of friction point that they make.
Right. I mean,
and with that, there needs to be a campaign around it too.
And let's do it for real this time. You know what I mean? Because like the last time they tried that, yeah, they were successful in changing the name, but absolutely nothing else changed. So
yeah,
the name change with the other majors, I think that's the ticket to it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Then they talked about healthier play. I'm good to move on from Treasure Hunter.
Sad part.
I'm good to move on from Treasure Hunter if you
want. Yeah, me too.
Okay. Healthier gameplay. Yeah.
It's sad. It saddens me a little bit. A little bit, yeah, because what this tells me is the old style of...
Double XP weekend is gone.
Yeah. And that sucks.
So they've recapped how they got there to this point of doing an extended double XP weekend that less than 1% use more than their 36 hours on a standard double XP weekend. So they felt that what they brought in was good. And they said the reception that the extended version got was very positive within the community. And now some numbers. 11% of all players used 36 hours worth. 47% used more than 18 hours, or half of it. And I'll save the stats on top skills trained for after.
See, I knew that was what was going to be used to justify this going forward. I knew it.
Yeah.
Because, see, that's the problem. Like, when it comes to RuneScape, there's lots and lots and lots of casual players, and that's cool. Like, I have no problem with that. But now you're shaping our double XP time around that, and I'm not sure that I'm really cool with that. Like, it sucks that we're going to lose kind of this cultural type event that was such a thing. That will be missed. You know, that will be missed. But hey, at least they're not going back to a like multiplier tick down crap. So I mean, at least we got that.
Yeah. And you know, it shows they had a graph that showed the amount of double XP that was used, and the 50% bracket worth on there. You know, like they said, only 18%. Used that amount or 11% used all 36 hours of that, right?
Yeah.
And you can see that based on just looking at this graph here. But looking at that same area, the amount of people who used all 36 hours in the first weekend is really negligible, like 1-2%.
Well, because they knew they didn't have to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's that. When you have the information, it's going to make a difference on the way you play and everything, right? I mean, people used to, like, I know people that would take the Friday off work, right? They'd take that Friday off work, and then and they didn't do that this year because they didn't have to. So, in a lot of ways, you know, it's good. The flexibility aspect of it is good, although we do lose the... Like I said, this event kind of thing.
Yeah, we felt that too.
Yeah, it just didn't seem like a big deal. And so I would love to see a mix of this. Like, I would like to see a real traditional double XP weekend and the extended both. Because I feel like if we shape everything around I don't know. I don't want to limit the 11% of the people because I'm just not sure that something doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah, and see, the important thing that came out with this is that they want to sync it up better in relation to release calendars. They also want to see if they need to give more time next time they do one of these.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the lines of communication are definitely open.
Yeah, I saw a lot of positive. I 100% anticipated that this was the report we were going to get from it. I totally expected that, but at the same time, and I'm open to change, but I think there's enough room to do both. And I'm not somebody that's really swayed because, oh, you prepared your meals. Okay, well, you didn't have to. So that's on you, bud. Like, if you're yelling at your mom to come bring your bedpan, that's on you, buddy. Like, I just, you know, I got to draw the line somewhere, and that's my line. So I feel like maybe the best way is to have a mix of things, because I did appreciate the added flexibility, but also appreciate that just that feeling of the preparation and the talking with your friends. And here's the other thing. You know what I noticed, Shane, this time around? Normally on a double XP weekend, you will see people in a Discord or whatever your voice thing is that you're using. You see people from your clan or friends that you haven't seen forever, and you talk and, you know, you catch up and stuff. That didn't happen at all this time around.
Yep.
I didn't see that at all. And I did miss that a little bit.
Yep. So. All right. I agree. And, you know, we tried to do that with our round table. And, you know, we had a bit of that on the first weekend, and that was good based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was positive. XP-wise, the top three skills were Herblore with 244 trillion XP gained. Trillion, not billion. Summoning with 180 trillion XP gained.
Yeah, why were they surprised that summoning was... I mean, hello? Hello?
And here's the real surprising one. Invention with 140 trillion gained.
Once again, why were they surprised?
How can you get that much... I mean, I think the reason invention is up...
Because you're doing it with everything you do.
And you have more time to do it.
But no matter what you're doing, you're probably leveling an invention. If you have any room in that 200 mil cap, you're getting invention XP. Like, if you're, you know, if you've maximized stuff, like, sure, you're getting more of it if you're doing combat. But nowadays, you know, you got your fishing rods, you got your, you got everything. There's something for just about any skill that you can augment invention-wise. So to me, that makes perfect sense. I was surprised that they didn't see that coming. I'm like, how do you not see that coming?
Herblore was up
at all times.
Herblore was up 160%. Summoning was only up 6%, but invention was up 52%. And Herblore makes sense because people want to get 120.
Yes. Yes.
Top 5 XP gains by players, no names given. Someone gained 199,916,882 summoning XP. And here's what I said you could do with farming, either before the farming update or after. 195,809,470 farming XP. Smithing, 185,819,513. That's definitely burial armor right there.
Oh, yeah.
Ranged, I don't know what you would do for this over 36 hours, but 153,159,029 XP.
Damn. I'm not even sure what the best range is nowadays.
And thieving, 124,589,937. Or 124 million, rather.
Yeah. If you were doing
safe cracking
through the... Well, I mean, you have to be doing it through the wilderness. Dwarf Traders is still better, no matter what anyone tells you. But it's more input, so... That's
absolutely insane
sense to me.
That's absolutely insane. That amount of XP.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Shane,
and I told you it was possible with player owned farm.
Oh, I knew. I mean, I picked up like 7, I think. 7 mil, somewhere around there. Because I used them, you know, before they turned into grow potions.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I knew someone could do it if they had prepared, you know, right.
Alrighty.
I'm sure it saddens you, though, a little bit.
Oh. That someone
could pull a 120 in a day.
Not really. Not really.
Well, that's good, then.
Because you got to work, work towards it, right? It's not a just, you know, go and do it. You got to save up the beans.
Oh, yeah.
You got to save up the seeds, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically just banking XP is the way I saw it.
Yeah. And, you know, I would love to do more work on that skilling character that I made, but it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Right.
So. All right. We talked about this last week, the dev blog for the Daily Challenges rework, which is coming in on Monday. I don't know that there's much to say that we didn't talk about in last week's live stream on this. It's a lot better. It factors into what we talked about in the monthly bit as well in terms of, you know, just making it so that it varies up your gameplay a bit, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're still going to have the ability to extend challenges. You're going to have the ability to re-roll them. So you could still get that Dungeoneering XP. It's not going to be as good as it is now, but you can definitely do it.
That's the one that hurts.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way around it.
But all the other
like,
ones, farming and herb lore and whatnot. Oh, yeah, that's a nice spot.
It's definitely more benefit than you know, than the takeaway. So...
Yeah.
I mean, there's that, but Dungeoneering, it's going to hurt.
So I'll just recap it for people who miss that. So they say first daily challenges feel unbalanced because there's currently a mix of quick and easy tasks with long and tedious ones. You're also forced to hand over the items you created, which feels unsatisfying. And you have to stop doing what you're doing and visit a challenge master in order to complete the challenges on that. And what they're going to be doing with this is they're going to be increasing player agency, otherwise known as player choice. So instead of having several challenges per skill, most of the time there'll now only be one. And this single challenge will require you to interact with the skill in the way that you choose. So you might be able to, might be asked to run 5 laps of an agility course, but you're free to pick which one. Or cut 28 logs, you'll be able to choose whichever ones that you want. The amount of activity to complete a challenge has also been reduced, not because of difficulty, but because completing a challenge often felt more like busy work, which I think we can all agree on is that, hey, I mean, you want to go make these 3 overload cells, you could probably be doing something else better with your time in terms of making these potions. Now, with this, the items that you got weren't as valuable and not nearly as useful, so they're just letting you keep all of them, and instead you're going to be getting a huge lamp from whatever the challenge might be. So I think that I think that sums it up quite well.
I think that works pretty well, you know, for the most part. And I am glad they're getting rid of just some of these very obscure challenges. Like you would have, you know, like sometimes in cooking, it always would hit me with cooking. You could get anything from summer pie to jellyfish to, you know, sailfish, whatever. It was all the same tier, and that sucked. So I'm pretty happy. I think if there's anything that I would love to see tweaked, it would be are you familiar with like with some games, your daily challenge? There's, you know, you get a bunch of them like we do here. You get, you know, but as long as you do one a day, it begins to create a streak, which you're better rewarded with. Like the longer your streak,
but you don't have to
do
them all.
You only have to do a like.
That's new to me.
Oh, okay. Well, that's how Red Dead does it. You have a bunch of different challenges, but as long as you do one.
So does this exist in game right now or no?
Yeah, it exists in Red Dead.
Okay, yeah. In Red Dead Redemption, not RuneScape.
Yes.
So this is something RuneScape. You'd like to see added.
I would like to see, yeah.
Okay.
I said this is the only, like, the only addition or tweak that I could see to make it even better would be something like that. Because I guess a little daunting doing a bunch of daily challenges, I feel like. But then again, maybe if I'd kept up on them, they wouldn't back up. Maybe that's it.
And I've been so busy with the farm and Yak Track that I don't even have time to start thinking about these. So
yeah, I guess that's true, because you only do get one a day here, don't you?
Yeah.
If you're caught up. Okay. I forget that because I've got like a whole bunch of them sitting there just waiting to be switched for the time that I need it. That makes sense.
All righty. Well, that'll be in on Monday, and we'll have our full feedback on that. We're going to move on to some listener questions. We definitely do have a few of those, some rather hilarious, actually one of them, but that's okay. So starting off, we're going to first mention our Patreon page and talk about our wonderful Patreon supporters. So this week I'd like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, Christian S., Darren L., Diana, Jason S., Kyle, Rastafa, Rippeth, Seth W., Tom V., Zachary K., The Naked Captain, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And in case you're wondering what we are talking about, you can head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb, and there you can find all of our tiers of Patreon support, starting as little as $1 a month. You get access to our entire back catalog of monthly bits. You get to vote in the monthly bit when we hold that vote. I got a special one coming for the first week of January, so we're foregoing the vote this month, but it'll be back for the February monthly bit. You also get early access to our show notes, and you, of course, help fund the costs for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank in our Discord server, and I mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, in addition to everything else. And for $5 a month, you will receive a shout-out each and every week, and with it, you also gain exclusive access to the clips that we use to produce the clip show at the end of the year, which is only a few weeks away now. So that's going to be good fun. And in case you're wondering what we're doing with this, we got our monthly bit that happens in the first week of every month. We got the RSBNB Update Roundtable, which is happening this Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with this. And we'll have all the links on how to join this in our Discord, or rather join the Discord for this, on our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB. And we're also working on Inside RSBNB Update as well for January. That feature took a bit of a break for December, but we'll be back with one of those. Might be a bit different at that tier in January. We got some fun things we might want to try. We're currently going to stew over that for Christmas, so definitely watch the space on that. But should we reach that $99 a month tier, I imagine Tannis will be showing me some Star Wars, and I'll be showing him some Star Trek.
Yeah.
So that'll be good fun. And
Can't wait.
For anyone wondering, we're currently at 74, so we're 25 bucks away from that $99 a month tier.
Ooh, and see, there's absolutely no rivalry at all. It's just good fun.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that.
Don't you got enough room in your heart to love it all, Shane? I do.
I just feel as though, well, I'm not going to say what I was just about to say. Alrighty, well then, let us move on to our questions this week. This week, Sirion, who was on the show, or on the monthly bit last week, actually had a question for us, which is interesting to say the least. And with this, he says, imagine you get invited to Jagex HQ to work on one update for an epic game jam weekend. Keeping in mind you have only one weekend to work on it, what would you create? His rough idea is achievement bounties. Each week it would pick 5 achievements you have left to do and put a bounty on each one for completing them, or completing part of them. So, for example, catch 100 charm sprites might be one, or gain 1 dungeoneering level. Completing these bounties would give you a reward, and the more you complete, the better the reward. It's a great way to provide some short-term goals when all the big achievements seem so far away.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that is definitely a good one, and it goes right into what we were talking about with our monthly bit from this past week, because, you know, we talked a lot about achievements there, what an achievement is and how they can evolve in RuneScape, so to speak, and I think Sirion's idea would be a great one if some J-mod working on an epic gem would be ever so kind as to take that up.
No.
But how about you? Do you have any game jam ideas?
Yeah,
I think I know what it's going to be.
The accessible loot beam would be the number one thing that I would do, and I would incorporate different color blindness filters, so you could change that depending on what kind of color blindness you had. I'd also have like a high contrast or a grayscale. Those are both very useful for visually impaired people to be able to see your loot beam. I would make it bigger, and I'd also have...
Bigger, do you mean wider or do you mean taller?
Yes. Wider.
Okay.
Wider. Along with that, I think one of the most important things would to be able to have a adjustable sound cue, something that you could pick out when you heard it, you knew something had dropped.
Like an alarm maybe? Or,
yes.
Because I imagine being an accessible loop beam, you'd want it so that people who can only hear certain areas of the hearing spectrum would be able to customize it.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
So that's something I think would be a good epic jam project.
And it's simple enough that you could probably do the graphics in-house for that too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, that's good. That's a really good one for accessibility. Mine would be with the impending release of Star Trek Picard in January, mine would be Enlightened Journey too. Because for those who don't know, Enlightened Journey is the quest that sees the balloon network based on Entrena, and Auguste, who is obviously supposed to be Captain Picard, you become his number one. You go to all of his officers and bring up the balloon network. So I would come up with some kind of a quest relating to the balloon network, either expanding it or making it more of a transportation method, as we've always talked about, transportation methods that you'd like to have for, you know, quest rewards. But I think the problem that would run into is how do you do transportation today in RuneScape when you can practically teleport to anywhere? So I would look at the areas that are least teleported to with the existing teleports and the areas that do not have teleports already and add them in. And maybe you could have, you know, a couple of skill focuses in this quest, say farming, crafting, and, oh, I don't know, maybe smithing. I'm just picking smithing for the hell of it, or maybe even mining. Say those skills, farming, crafting, and mining, and then you would have skill focuses that you would need to do during that quest, and that would unlock the various balloon transport methods to those different kind of skilling focus points, maybe, I guess you could say. Something along those lines, or maybe just take it up a level and make the revamp balloon network go to places that aren't teleported to or places that have no teleports currently. But I think that'd be a fun little bottle quest to work on of some sort. I don't know what the storyline would be. Maybe we'll have to watch the pilot of Star Trek Picard and figure that out first.
I mean, I would totally be into another Picard quest. That'd be cool. Yeah. Maybe if we had some kind of new transportation, it could be like Skywalker. Eh? Eh? Eh?
No. Oh. No. 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 You can't do that. You can't combine those two things.
Oh, okay.
Alrighty. Thank you, Sirion, for that one. Hopefully we have planted some seeds and some J-mod out there. The next one is from Rastafa on the topic of creating a safe environment for players. As discussed on the Duty of Care livestream, Jagex seems to be making an attempt to separate their legal and ethical responsibilities and demonstrate that while legal responsibilities in this area provide a baseline, a number of their practices and or ideals stretch above that and towards the goal of addressing their ethical responsibilities. Okay. So my question is, what types of behaviors do you see as commonly represented in-game as contributing towards an unsafe environment, and what can Jagex do to combat these, and what should they do? Are you optimistic about the future in this area based on what was discussed on the live stream? I love the podcast. Keep up the great work. I think the biggest one right now is any forms of games of chance that come up, whether they be in the dual arena or otherwise. And they touched briefly on this in the live stream. You know, just don't curtail the entire dual arena with this. But, you know, I've long said that if players want somewhere to gamble, make some kind of gambling thing that acts as a GP sink that gives the players the ability to be rewarded in some way. Which, I mean, we kind of have with the deep sea fishing traveling merchant, because that is a GP sink that I can think of when you pay your GP for your living right. plants and anima and the like. But I mean, if players want somewhere,
there's no game to it, though.
No, there's not. And maybe there needs to be some mini game out there that takes 5 to 10 minutes to do that you have to sink 100k GP into, and you're guaranteed to get something out of it to satisfy people's games of chance problem.
Kill another series of poker?
I would enjoy that.
Right?
Yeah, I would. But then you go into the whole side of gambling, which, I mean, they probably don't want to do.
Yeah, you know, but poker's kind of... it's different because
It's a tactical game.
Yeah, like it's yes, there is some chance, but there's also a lot of skill involved. I don't know. I agree with I would tamp down on like the ways that the dual arena is abused. There's lots of little tiny tweaks and scams you got to watch out for there. And I think those are the kinds of things I know for sure that, I mean, I've heard people, you know, staking and then and quitting because they lost their whole bankroll. That's kind of on you. But if it happens because of some kind of shady practice, that's a little different. So I'd like to, yeah, that would be good to be curtailed. I don't know. I
just want to say that it's not as bad as it used to be in 2007-ish, and it's not as bad as it is in old school.
Okay. Well, that's
good. In terms of games of chance and predatory players out there. Like, I remember when luring happened every single day. I don't know if that still happens in the wilderness or not, but I remember that being a huge, huge problem back in the day.
Yeah, well, there's just a lot of
armor trimming.
Very careful.
Which the funny part about that, armor trimming is a real legit thing nowadays with the smithing rework.
Right. No, I'm talking like you have to be very careful with the window that comes up and the way that you set like the rule settings and all that. Like you just have to be very vigilant of that. So anything that makes that harder to scam somebody with would be good. I don't really, you know, I mean, after the flower game was dealt with, I don't see that really much anymore. So I think it comes down to like a lot about what our discussions were earlier. Now, one thing that I think they definitely definitely could help with is like if someone gets singled out, like say, you run up against somebody, you don't even know why you pissed them off, but all of a sudden they're pissed off. Next thing you know, they've got 20 of their friends trolling your clan chat, just on and on and on, and harassing you.
Ooh, that reminds me of the old days.
Right, but it does still happen.
Okay.
And so that would be something that I think they could definitely step up and do. But, you know, when you look at it, it's like, I think the legal requirements are like the most basic low bar possible because that's just how law works. Right. I mean, it's usually a pretty low bar. And so we hope that companies will take an ethical approach. Most don't.
And I would like to point
pretty
out
glad that Jagex does
that. Jagex was the only one to respond to the UK government in this regard.
Yeah.
And I should say that there is no guarantee that this committee will continue to push this with the election that is happening today in the UK. because the way it works is that when a parliament is dissolved, all of its committees are dissolved too, and it's up to the committees that come after if they want to keep pursuing what they were doing before. So we'll have to wait and see if this is even a thing in the new parliament. But in any case, JAGEX needs to be given credit for responding when really no one else did.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. And I don't mind. I mean, I think it's good that governments are looking into the gambling aspect of some of this stuff. I mean, that's what we've been calling for. That's what a lot of people have been asking for. So that's being responsive to the people. That's good. It's just a matter of the right balance. And frankly, I'm glad that somebody out there is actually doing it from an ethical standpoint, or at least doing more than they have to.
Right.
Because at least in my country, you're so used to the bare minimum.
One of the biggest things that they could go against would be gold farming hubs and, you know, make an entire initiative out of it, not just for their game, but all the games. Because these gold farming hubs are run out of countries like China and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you have people who live in these huts and whatnot who effectively play the game for 12 to 18 hours a day. They earn mere pennies, you know, compared to what we would expect as a fair wage here in the Western world. And they are just doing this to earn money because it's, you know, one of the only jobs that they can do. And it's predatory in that way. And it happens in every MMO out there. And I think the biggest thing that they could do, talking about unsafe environment and ethics versus legal responsibilities, would be to go after these hubs, make a big deal out of it when they take one of them down successfully, and showcase to the rest of the video game industry that, hey, we are here, we are being a leader in this, we just took down this gold farming hub. What is your game doing? We are also making strides in removing randomness from our in-game prize mechanic on Treasure Hunter. We are diversifying our monetization stream so that players have more choice in terms of engaging with the content. And we want to ensure everybody gets good value along the way. And I think if they came out swinging on that front, that would be the biggest thing that they can do. Because I have to say, in my day-to-day gameplay, I don't see much that would constitute an unsafe environment. I don't know if you do or if I'm just going to the wrong places.
No, I agree with that. I mean, you know, unless you go to portables and then nothing's unsafe, but you're going to see some words that aren't safe for work. But something you just said, I kind of gave me the thought that also advocate for the gaming companies to lobby their governments couldn't you make this as a part of a trade negotiation that, okay, China, let's do business. Yep. We're going to need you to crack down on these gold farms. Yep. and stuff like that. Yep. And I don't know how it works in other countries. In our country, you could just bribe. I mean, give a campaign donation to certain congressmen, and they're going to be on your side.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I'm
definitely.
Guessing in Canada, you'd have to do it, you know, with a letter.
This kind of thing as well, you would want to as well. And, you know, you could see this and you have to ask, why aren't more people doing this? And this is something I think that is relatively thought of as being in the background. Because, I mean, hey, what government thinks of a online gold farm as an illegal activity? Most politicians probably don't even know that that exists.
Right, but if they find out that they're getting less in tax revenue from the company because the company is making less because they're losing money because of these gold farms,
makes sense
change
to go
some
after
opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anything to give you, I mean, anything in a negotiation like that, right, is another chip, another angle you can go at, another, you know, another aspect that you can try to negotiate, essentially.
Yeah. And, I mean, like I said, I don't like doing the comparison thing where we say it could be worse. But I think just the fact that we had this live stream this week that, you know, answered the questions many players did have that weren't asked, and it went off relatively well without a hitch, I think that speaks a lot too.
Yeah, no, I'm very pleased with the direction of the live streams and the improvement that has come in a short amount of time. Like, I think that's good, and I think, I mean, I try to call things out when they're bad, and I try to do the same thing when they're good.
Oh, yeah.
This was a good week.
Oh, yeah, so, definitely.
You know?
All right. And finally, Rastafa says, I love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, awesome.
And now from Trekkie, ending off on a lighthearted question, if you could ride one of the new dinosaurs into combat, which one would it be? You know, the age-old question of mounts.
Well, see, here's the problem. The one I want doesn't work right.
What?
Like, so, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to be on a pterosaur, but the damn thing doesn't fly? So, like, I don't want to be on a doofus pterosaur that can't fly. But that's what I want. I want to be, you know, the queen of dragons, you know, or the mother of dragons. Yeah.
Dinosaurs.
That's what I want. Close enough. Yeah. Dinosaurs.
All right. You know, I got to go with the big Pavasaurus Rex.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. It's just something I like doing. And, you know, if I had the choice, I definitely would. And in Star Trek Online, I fly some of the hugest ships that are out there. And it's just nice, you know, having a big presence like that. So.
Compensating much, Shane?
Oh, for the...
Do you drive a big truck, too?
No.
Sorry, I had to.
I know many people that do, though.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you. Thank you, Trekkie, for that. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsvmb.com, or you can leave them on our forums at update.rsvmb.com/ask. But probably by far the easiest way, if you are on social media, is to just send them into Twitter when we ask for them, or you can send them in any week. Just mention us at RSBNB on Twitter, or send us a direct message. We take direct messages. So, alrighty. So we're into tech news right now, and you know, I wanted to talk about this story because this has been cropping up in the media all too much recently, and you know, this is this headline that a new maxed out Mac Pro will cost you $53,000 without display. Yeah, $53,000 for a maxed
without
out.
Without a display? How do you have a Mac Pro?
That's
laptop,
a tower.
Right?
That's a tower.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This would give you a 2.5 gigahertz, 28-core Intel Xeon processor with turbo boost up to 4.4 gigahertz. Yeah.
Did you say 28-core?
Yeah.
Like, is it a real core or is it virtual cores?
Real.
What?
Yeah.
Are they? Do they do the hyper threading thing?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who would? What?
1.5 terabytes
That's
of memory.
Nuts.
2 Vega Pro, 2 Radeon Pro Vega 2 Duo graphics cards with 32 gigabytes of VRAM each, 4 terabytes of SSD storage. The Apple Afterburner card, which accelerates SSD storage, and it should also add on the wheels to the Mac Pro for $400, and would get you the Magic Mouse and Magic Trackpad.
Damn, and you still can't game on it?
You could definitely game on it. I mean, you could install. You could install Windows on this thing. It'd be interesting to see what it would do, but there are far better optimal gaming builds out there, and I just wanted to talk about this because
that's huge. Like, that's got some power.
And the reason is that this computer is meant for the 1%. If any consumer is thinking of buying this computer, the answer is no, you don't need it. And I say that for this one, but also for the base model as well, because these computers are designed for those in the film industry as one, those who need to, you know, work on movies from the Marvel studio or Pixar or your Star Wars friends who need to, you know, go out there and render their Baby Yoda and have it done, have the scene done in 10 minutes for review at 4K, and they're doing all this complicated 3D rendering with it. The Lion King is another example. Those kind of movies. Those are the people that need these computers.
And so maybe like companies are going to be buying them anyway.
Exactly. Right? So it's going to be for the Disneys, the Pixars, the science world, who is doing things like gene sequencing and whatnot as well. So,
well, at least there's a good cause, a good reason. Not that movies aren't, but, you know, at least there is something planted.
This is a computer that was talked about with the industry itself. This is the computer that the industry wanted going back to 2013. Because, you know, back in 2005, Apple built a great pro computer that was later morphed into the Mac Pro. It was called the PowerMac G5. Everybody loved the enclosure of it. They updated it to Intel. Then they stopped making it, and then they made the Mac in 2013 that looked like a trash can, the Mac Pro back then, because it did look like a trash can. And people didn't like that, and they wanted a return to the traditional Mac Pro, and that's what this is. This is built for the video editing industry, the music production industry, those kind of things. That is who this computer is built for. Anybody else who is, you know, saying they might want to render 4K video or just, you know, edit plain Jane 4K video without 3D assets in it or something like that is going to do well enough with getting one of the current iMac, 5K iMacs that's out there that you can get with a 9-core processor on it and a good video card. So that's what I wanted to hit home with this story, is that, yes, it's expensive, but it is a computer that is designed for the Pixars and the Disneys of the world, not for the actual consumer. And that's what people need to take away from this. And, I mean, this isn't Apple's core business anymore. Apple's core business is not the desktop computer. It is the iPhone, decreasingly so, and their services industry. So they can get away with making a computer that's worth $53,000 that only 1% of their customer base will purchase. So,
you know,
and people are hating on it just because it's expensive, but the people hating on it have no idea what it's actually going to be used for.
You could probably put it together yourself for a hell of a lot cheaper, couldn't you? Like,
well, see the
a
thing
– a lot cheaper.
But see, the thing is with this is that these Intel Xeon processors are expensive.
Well, I figured there might be 5K.
Yeah, you could probably put something similar to this together for probably half the amount on this. But the one thing that you're forgetting that you're getting with this is you're getting the hardware design with this. And just looking at the engineering perspectives of the metal itself, not necessarily the circuitry inside, it is an absolutely amazing machine.
Oh, so you're talking like design kind of aspect.
Yeah, like the
kind
physical
of
the design
Johnny
of it. Yes.
Of looking. Okay,
yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And, I mean, people who are buying this are wanting an all-in-one solution so they don't need to be messing around because, you know, when you're dealing with this kind of processor and these kind of video cards, you are going to need some kind of mammoth heat sink that if you're cooling it on air – it's going to be noisier than normal.
I was going to say, there's no way they're cooling out on air.
Yeah, it's cooled on air.
With AMD video cards?
Uh-huh.
No way.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. AMD video cards have always performed better on macOS than NVIDIA.
Why is that? Because they're usually run
the drivers,
so much hotter.
It's the drivers.
Huh.
And this is the thermal envelope that they designed for it, is to be able to run two of these video cards like this and later on have it be upgradable in that perspective as well. So, let's see. The 2.5 gigahertz, 28-core Intel processor, if you want to go that route, add $7,000 to the price. But keep in mind that the base Mac Pro has a 3.5 gigahertz 8-core chip. So you have less cores, but you get more speed out of them. So it's up to you whether you need the cores or if you need the raw speed. This chip costs $3,200 US.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually not as much as I would have thought. So...
It's a 255 watt chip, though, so it's very heat intensive. And this thing has a 1.4 kilowatt power supply, whereas most of our computers are running 600-700 watts.
Yeah, yeah.
So double. And, I mean, you don't need to go to this level of 32,000. You can go down in memory value or in memory and use aftermarket memory as well, because you were always able to do that in a Mac, and you can save $15,000 off the top right there if you just went with 768 gigabytes of DDR for ECC. So this is if you configured it at Apple. And people who are buying this are going to buy it with the base memory and then just add in their own memory, because you can get actually better memory than what Apple is selling here for this and use it in it.
Makes sense. So, I mean, this is a supercar.
Exactly. This is the Ferrari or whatever the most expensive car you can think of is. And that's why I say it's for the 1% who are working on projects at places like Disney and Pixar.
Okay.
So, and, you know, and this is just something you can always remind people when they say, hi, Apple's put out a $53,000 computer. Look at what they're doing now. It's not for you.
Right. Well, obviously. Yeah. Right. Well, but it's weird, though, because people don't have the same reaction like to a supercar
or
something like that.
Because that's what this is.
Yeah.
There are people who can use a supercar who are racing and whatnot. Some people buy it just to have it. And that's the same thing with this. Some people will buy it just to have it, but there are people who can definitely use it as well.
Right.
And I'm not going to talk about the display because, you know, we talked about that when it came out. The display is around $5,000 or something to that as well, and it doesn't come with a stand. But the reality is the majority of people out there who are using these computers use their own screen mounts and stands. So that's why it doesn't come with one.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Alrighty, moving on to our next piece of tech news. This was in the news last week. We didn't get to it because we had other ones. But Larry Page stepped down as CEO of Alphabet, the parent company to Google. And with this, Sundar Pichai, who is the current CEO of Google, will now also be the CEO of Alphabet. And with this, Sergey Brin, who was the co-founder of Google with Larry Page, is also giving up his position as president of Alphabet, too. They'll stay on the board and they'll keep control of the company through their ownership stakes, but they won't be making any day-to-day decisions with this. I'm of two minds on this. I think it's interesting to see that, you know, the founders are moving on. That's what happened with Microsoft when Paul Allen and Bill Gates stepped away from it, and people had many of the same reactions. It's probably about time for that. But on the same time, I don't know if it really makes sense to appoint Sundar Pichai, who is also the CEO of Google, to be the CEO of Alphabet, because you know all too well that Alphabet and Google are under huge scrutiny for having a monopoly. And if you have the same CEO of both companies, you kind of have to ask that question even more.
Well, it was all a sham anyway, right? I mean, come on.
Alphabet is Google and Google is Alphabet, people will say, but they are indeed different companies. And, you know, I think they did that to try and see if they could spin up any of the other bets, as they call them, which are, you know, businesses like Waymo, the self-driving car business as well, on here.
Really? You think that's why? I think they did it because it bought them a few extra years of not being, you know, in court over antitrust or something to that effect.
Yeah, that's why they did the split into Alphabet. But and that's why, you know, having the same CEO for Alphabet and Google now is really questionable, unless they plan on bringing someone else into Alphabet eventually.
Right, but
or
for
someone
all
else into Google.
Purposes, did it really, I mean, did it really change anything to begin with when they did it?
Yeah. And, I mean, we know from talking about tech news each and every week that Alphabet is not the company to be worried about.
No, you probably should. You need to put your sights squarely on old Mark.
Yeah. And, you know, Sirion and I were talking about this, and we said, you know, of the tech CEOs, there are a few that are really shining right now, and people don't really draw much attention to it. It's Sundar Pichai of Google and Satya Nadella of Microsoft. They don't get much attention. Tim Cook is doing all right. But on the other hand, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, as we have said many, many times, doesn't seem like he's fit for that job.
I don't think he's human. I think he's a robot.
Yeah, lots of people have said that. And, you know, I think what the goal here is just to move Sundar up to the CEO of Alphabet eventually and then bring someone else in for Google. I think that's the way they're going to go with this.
You know, I can't help but to wonder, is the CEO really all that damn important? I mean,
in some companies,
they pay him like they are,
in
but
some companies.
Like, really, at the end of the day.
But Google is really decentralized.
I mean, they're not Tony Stark, right? They're not actually doing anything.
Google's really decentralized. And, you know, a company where the CEO was important was Apple's, or Steve Jobs' Apple.
Well, yeah, and look at the thanks they gave him.
Yeah. So the CEO, you're right, the CEO probably isn't as important as people make it out to be in this age. And I'd say the same with Microsoft as well.
Yeah. Well, and we have the evidence to prove it, right? I mean, Bill Gates wasn't there for Windows 10, was he? I
mean, no. And Windows 10 is really great. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
All right. Last piece of tech news, and I love talking about these each and every year. The Year in Search for 2019 is out. From Google. So we'll do our countries and then we'll do global. There's also a video associated with this that you can watch, a 2-minute long video summarizing the year's events. But I actually want to talk about some of the things that were searched. So trending 2019 for the United States, top searches were Disney Plus, Cameron Boyce, Nipsey Hussle, whatever that is, Hurricane Dorian, and Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. Top news items were Hurricane Dorian, the Notre Dame Cathedral, the Women's World Cup, the Area 51 raid, and Copa America.
No, the Area 51 raid. What country was that, Shane?
U.S.
Well, what was the first one you read?
Hurricane Dorian.
No. First list.
Oh, the first one was searches. The second one was news.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Sorry.
People and Antonio Brown, Jussie Smollett, James Charles, Kevin Hart, and R. Kelly. Now, here's the one, of course, that everyone's wondering about. Babies. Number one, Baby Yoda. Number two,
yes.
Baby Shark. Number three, Royal Baby. Number four, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West Baby. And then number five is Cardi B Baby. Ugh.
You can tell which ones I like, right?
Yeah, I can. All right, and moving into Canada now, because this is the other half of the show for this one. Top searches in Canada were the Toronto Raptors, Kawhi Leonard, the Canadian election results, Luke Perry, and Cameron Boyce. Our top news results were similar, including the Toronto Raptors, the Canada election results, Bianca Andreescu, who is a tennis player, Don Cherry, and the Alberta election, which is home. And let's see, we don't have the top babies one on this one. That must have only been a thing in the U.S. for this. Why? Why is Toronto called the Six? Why did Don Cherry get fired? And, oh boy, why is blackface offensive?
What?
Yeah.
You have to ask it. Well, I guess you guys might not have the same cultural background of it, but still, that should be pretty obvious, right?
I would think so too.
I mean, that was the only thing that Trump ever said that was true. Justin Trudeau is in fact two-faced. We've seen both of them.
Yeah. I still shake my head over that, but other why questions. Why is it called Good Friday, and why am I always tired?
Now, so the whole like hockey thing, that's like a real thing. That's not a stereotype. You guys are really, really into your hockey, huh?
Of course. Oh, and the number one who question was, who should I vote for? Okay.
Well, you could, you'd tell them that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's a question you should be asking Google.
Right. Well, Putin says. No, now, wait, that's the wrong. That's Facebook.
Now, globally, the top searches were India versus South Africa, Cameron Boyce, Copa America, Bangladesh versus India, and iPhone 11. And the top five in news were Copa America, Notre Dame, the ICC Cricket World Cup, Hurricane Dorian, and the Rugby World Cup at number five.
Huh. And I need to watch a rugby thing sometime.
Yeah, it's cool. Apparently it's an interesting sport. But yeah, you can go here. You can watch the video on this. Look at the entire year in search. And, you know, in some ways I think we saw that disastrous YouTube rewind, which was effectively a list of most popular videos last week because people hated what they did the year before. I think what people search for tells a bigger story than what they watch on YouTube. So that's why I always put more stock in the year in search rather than what we got in YouTube videos. So,
well, and I mean, come on, YouTube plays favorites, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. And if fun fact, if you go on this website, you can go all the way back to 2001 to see search year in search results. And we've been.
Did any of them surprise you, Shane?
Not really. Not really.
Yeah, me neither.
Not really. And I always remember covering this on the podcast at this time of year. So it's always just a fun thing to do as one of our last few tech news stories of the year. All right. We got some achievements this week, don't we?
We do, but fewer
not nearly
than the last
as many as we thought. So I'll give us a start out with Orgelmer with 99 invention on the December 11th. Taffing Spy also on the 11th with 99 fishing. Doc Hawk with 99 crafting on December 10th. Kazanda with 99 agility on December 9th. Jadchor with 120 defense on December 8th. And on December 7th, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, We're Cool with 99 thieving. Minority with 99 runecrafting. And Ripith with 99 construction.
All right. Good job, everyone. We also have Frost Cappy with 99 engineering on December 6th. New Dragon X with 99 fishing on December 6th. We have Frost Capping with 99 Slayer on the 6th. Frost Capping again with 99 Invention on December 6th. We have Love Natural with 99 Invention on December 5th. Doc Hawk with 99 Agility on December 5th. And Gwen Wyvern. X, Wyver X, with 99 Constitution on December 4th, and 1RYB with 99 Magic on December 4th.
I think that's
4th.
One rib.
One rib?
Yeah, that's one how I'd rib. Say that.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, one rib, the Y instead of an I. Okay. Yep. Good job, everyone.
Yeah, nicely great. Done. Nicely done. Seeing progress still be made after double XP weekend, that's always fun rather than seeing people keel over and just not do anything.
You know, and we didn't see that this time around, right? Yeah. There were no XP hangovers, as we say.
And it's been fairly steady, too, so that's good.
Yeah.
All righty, pick of the week time.
I got a pick for us, Shane.
Okay.
I got a pick. So, as some of the listeners know, you know, I'm a big gamer, and I also like to, when I can, I like to get my daughter involved. And recently, a game has came out. It came out in November, I believe mid-November, called Planet Zoo. If you are a fan of, like, Planet Coaster or Jurassic World Evolution, basically, you know, any game from Frontier.
These are the same guys who do Elite Dangerous, the space game.
Oh, I didn't realize. Yeah. I didn't realize they did Elite Dangerous. Yeah. Yeah, I'm only familiar with them with their management games and all that. But really excellent game. It's Planet Zoo. You build your zoos. You have to take care of your animals and all of that stuff, but it is so educational, like, and it's so fun because I love to get my daughter out here, and you know, and she will look up the animal stuff and find out everything we need for our habitats because they have a little Zoopedia type thing, and then we figure all that out, and then we build the habitat for that animal, and it's really fun. You know, it's probably not an entry level type builder game, but if you're not good at like creating like different, you know, building and stuff like that, you can get it pretty much whatever you want from the workshop on Steam. So, which is what I do because I'm not real good at like just building things right. necessarily, but.
So you're saying you can get the you can get the habitats on Steam then?
You can. I don't do it so much with the habitats, but like some of the architecture. So okay. like if you're building a zoo entrance, right? A zoo entrance for me is going to be very blocky because I'm very basic. I don't have the skills. But on Steam, you might find someone that has a whole Indian style Taj Mahal theme that's really cool. You know, and you can go ahead and plop that down instead of. You know, making a block entrance like mine. But it, like I said, it's a lot of fun. It's a good family game. I mean, you know, if you're playing with kids, it's super educational. You'll definitely learn something about animals for it. Like if you're into animals.
It also won a Gamescom award at Gamescom 2019.
Yeah, it's a great game and great music. Oh my. The music is really good. It's like really upbeat. It's really simple. It kind of harkens back to a different time with gaming music, if that makes any sense to you. But yeah.
That was a bit of a video there by accident. Continue on. What kind of animals can we expect out of this?
Oh, wow. So, I mean, there's I can't even remember how many animals. But
zebras, bears, I see.
Oh, wolves, zebras, elephants, bears, lions,
crocodiles,
tigers, snow leopards, Nile monitor, saltwater crocodiles, hippopotamus, all sorts of different monkeys, chimpanzees, bonobos.
Can you breed the animals?
Wildebeest. Yes, that is the magic, right? So you can breed the animals, and then as the animal like gets older and it reaches like adolescence or, you know, basically like a ranch out time situation, you can then sell that animal. Well, not sell it, but you release it into the wild. And that gives you conservation credits that you can then get other more exotic animals and stuff. So it's really encouraging and reinforcing like the conservation and not only having the animals in captivity, but breeding them to make it, make their population stronger in the wild. So I love that aspect of it.
Yeah, because you know, there's a big thing in zoos where you know you can breed an animal and breed it to be a zoo animal, or you can breed an animal and have the habitat for it. So that, and I'm just saying in the real world, and you'll correct me if the game can do this or not, where you can breed it so that it'll be a zoo animal for its life, or you can breed it to eventually be released into the wild. And there's different ways of looking after the animal and taking care of it and feeding it and the like.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty much it's pretty much going to be the same, but all of the requirements of the habitat have to be met, and it's so I mean they put a little more I think on that, but just the mere fact that is in the game I think is like an extremely just a great thing, and especially with the young people, you know, it really gets people looking at conservation and just all the stuff. I've had a good time with the game. That's why it's my pick of the week.
Alrighty, sounds good. Available, of course, on Steam. Looks like it's got some interesting requirements to it. Minimum 8 gigs of RAM and a GTX 770, so that's a couple generations old, so it should run fine on most modern computers, then, I guess we can say.
Yeah, I mean, I just management games like that seem to have some of those, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's just a lot going on under the hood with them.
Yeah. I might need to upgrade my computer at some point in the next year. I'm running a 3570K from 2012 with a 1060. The graphics card is okay, but I haven't really felt that bound by the CPU. So, I mean, I'm running from 2012, and it's not too bad for gaming. If I was producing the podcast on it, it would have been upgraded by now. But
well, and with K, you can over
overclock it a bit. Probably get another 500 megahertz out of it or so. But it's a topic for a different day. All righty. Well, that pretty much wraps up this episode of RSBNB Update. If you guys, of course, want full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. You can also join us in our friends chat, Bits, Bytes, and Game. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast and any number of podcast listeners out there, you can do that too. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Spotify, YouTube, anything under the sun, update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. So we'll see you guys next week for what is the last regular RSBNB Update episode of 2019. Take care, everyone.
See ya.